It's like, man, are you okay? He said, yeah, man, I was just acting. And I thought to myself, literally, I was like, I could do that. I could do that better than you could do that.
This is the Real Vibe Podcast.
Welcome to the Real Vibe Podcast, Aaron and Jacoby.
Hey, man. How are you?
Back here at the ASL Studios, New York City's newest high-end video, photo, and podcast studio.
Beautiful. Wow, so this good. Is amazing here.
We just, one more time, the crew here is just unbelievable.
Unbelievable. Tip your waitress. These people are amazing. The 7:30 show is not the same as a 9:30 show, so book it twice.
We have maybe the most distinguished guest that we have had who everyone mm-hmm. will be able to put. What I love about Harry Lennox being on the podcast
is Harry Lennox, everyone. He is here, yes.
Everyone is going to look at Harry Lennox and think a different character or a different role in so many different projects that you have done over the years. So we're going to talk about that for a little bit. But wanted to open up with what I think is the best question that we could ask him. I don't think you've ever been asked this question.
All right.
So Harry, very nice to meet you.
Great to meet you.
Big fan. Yeah. Big fan. Loved everything you've done for over the years. From the impressive schedule and stuff that you've maintained over the years to working with iconic actresses and actors and movie roles and everything you've done, I have one question for you. What was your very first job ever?
As an actor or,
no.
or
a career? Let's talk about Harry's first job. That's where we won.
Excellent. Well, it's great being with you guys, by the way.
Thanks for coming over.
You know, we've been having a great conversation, folks, by the way. And Jacoby, before I answer that, one of my favorite actors is Lee J. Cobb. His real name was Lee Jacoby.
Yeah.
Or Louis Jacoby or something like that. But anyway, that's so I love that name. But
I got it because my mom smoked a lot of marijuana.
See, that explains a lot.
Okay. Yeah. She's like, I only know you for 30 minutes. I could have figured that out. What was the first job? What was it?
First job was actually riding on my brother's handlebars and throwing the papers on his paper route.
Paper boy.
Yeah. But assistant.
Assistant.
As it were, a kind of novitiate paper boy, because I literally just would throw it and he would ride. But the first job after that was, I was 10 years old and I was an assistant custodian in a big building, a big apartment building. I don't know how many units. There might have been 100 units in here, about 3 blocks from my elementary school, St. Bride Elementary School. So I would, you know, mop down the stairwells. And then, of course, our real bread and butter days was when in the autumn when you could rake. That was worth a lot.
And then shoveling, man.
I was one of the guys. I would walk around. And if you wanted your park, your driveway cleared out or your sidewalk shoveled, but at this building we would do it, and then people would give us like side jobs, you know, of shoveling out their parking space.
Odds and ends, whatever you could do. And where was this?
Chicago on the south side, very close.
Yep,
very close to the elementary school.
That's awesome.
So I was in fifth grade or something like that at 10 years old. So
Southside Chicago, that's a rough neighborhood.
It was.
Yeah.
Born and raised.
Nice.
What do you miss about Chicago?
I don't, because I'm always there. I
was just
I was just there last week, man. I'm going back in a couple of days, actually. I'm there a lot. I'm trying to build a performing arts center on the south side.
Awesome.
Not in my neighborhood, but close by. So this would be a performing arts museum, which would feature dance, music, act, you know, performances, plays.
Wow.
Or spoken word, film and television. So
nice.
Yeah.
How'd you get your start in what, I don't know what we call it.
How'd you go from paperboy to legend?
Yeah, that's a great.
How'd you do that? Assistant paperboy to
assistant paperboy to assistant legend. I think really what sparked me was a kind of nexus between the church, the liturgy of the church. I studied to be a priest. I was in a seminary as a very young fellow. And then, and there are, of course, many things in common. You know, you get up there in front of people. There's a kind of ritual aspect to it.
I did 3 years in seminary. I 100% know where there this
you
is.
Go. Okay. You know, the power of the words, the power of the spectacle, all of that, I think, kind of got me prepped for it. But I remember when I was a second grader, I might have been 8 years old or something, and I saw my brother in a skit, my eldest brother. He's no longer here with us. He died in 2010. But I saw him do this performance where he was a gangster on a corner, you know, and somebody came up and hit him with what was a rolled-up paper, but I thought was what we used to call a baton, like a blackjack type thing.
Right, right.
It was a blackjack. It looked like that. And then I thought he was hurt. And then a few minutes later, he came around a little thing. This is like a little assembly that you do in school. Everybody knew. Everybody was on the joke except for me. And it's like, man, are you okay? He said, yeah, man, I was just acting. And I thought to myself, literally, I was like, I could do that. I could do that better than you could do that. And so I always had this aptitude. Like, we would do spring rituals and things like this where you're crowning the Blessed Virgin Mother and so forth.
Right.
And then we would have to say little lines. And if any kid didn't know their line, I knew it. Like I had memorized it somehow in the rehearsals. And so I knew that I had an aptitude for memorization and for elocution and that I was, relatively speaking, a pretty charming kid. And so I thought, you know, I didn't think, well, let me become an actor at that age.
Right.
But by the time that occurred that, hey, I can maybe do this, I knew that I had those qualities.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so that's really what it was. And then I left the seminary. I went and studied this stuff at Northwestern University. I had great teachers and great people that I could look at who were working professionally while they were in school. People like my friend George Newbern and Marietta DePrima. And I was in school with David Schwimmer. And I was, you know, and these people were working like really early.
Wow.
And so was I. And so I didn't really ever kind of have that transition of, you know, I kind of went right into it in college. You know, I was working as a pro, and so it never stopped. I didn't ever not really work. There might be a year or two here and there, you know, over the course of the decades.
Right.
There was one time I didn't work for a year, or at least I didn't work with pay, but I was producing my own stuff, which is also something I've always done. So I've always been a self-starter in that way. I've always been huge fan of the work and studying the work, learning the various aspects of the work from the writing of it. I study that with the great Linda Jenkins, you know, at Northwestern University's. She actually was the teacher of people like John Logan, who wrote the script for Gladiator and a couple of other, you know, Academy Award winning movies, Tony Award winning writers and so forth. So I've always studied the various components of what goes into theater, film, et cetera.
So
awesome.
Yeah.
Get interested in it at a very young age. But
yes.
What else is Harry into at 8, 9, 10 years old?
Excuse me. I was very much into, I wanted to be the Pope when I was about 10 years old.
Ooh, okay.
And so, I had a higher ambition.
High. Yeah, I was like, he wanted to be the Pope, but he saw somebody get hit in the head of church.
Not the priest in the parish. He just wanted to be the Pope.
Yeah. I wanted to be the Pope until somebody got whacked in the head, and it changed the whole. A star was born.
This should be the bio to somebody's Instagram.
Hey, listen, there have been a couple of questionable deaths in the Vatican, so maybe it's not that far removed. You know? John Paul I, you know, I was actually in the seminary when because he was only in the papacy for a couple months.
Yeah.
And so when I'm a sophomore in high school, Pope John Paul II came to Chicago. I played in the band.
Oh, wow.
That was the first time a Pope had ever been to the city of Chicago. He was Polish, right? And I got to meet,
you got to be around the Pope.
I got to be around the Pope. He was Polish, and that Chicago is the second largest Polish city outside of Warsaw. And so he really wanted to see the city, and the whole city was a glow. This was 1979, late 1979.
I was born that year. That was my year. Is that right? Yeah, I was born in 1979.
How do you like that? See?
Yeah.
Could it be a coincidence? I don't think so.
Well, I was born right after Elvis died, and Mom said that it's 100% not me. So.
Yeah, man.
You take that phrase, it's like meeting the Pope. Like, that's a phrase Midwestern mothers use.
Yeah. That's like, a stable. Yeah. You ain't anybody until you met the Pope. You actually, met the Pope.
Yes, I did. I got a Pope joke.
Absolutely.
Okay. So Pope is in the he's in Chicago for the first time, and he's been driven around in a limousine, and you know he says to the driver, he says, you know, my son, are you Catholic? And the driver says, yes. You know, as a matter of fact, I am Holy Father. He says, you know, they never let me have any fun. I never get to drive. I always have to do all this formal. Would you mind terribly if I drove the car for a little while? You know, let me see. He's like, I don't know. You know, that's against regulations. I would have to call the city. He said, no, you don't have to do it. Just a mile or two. So, of course, the Pope gets behind the wheel and he takes off like a bat out of hell. He's going real fast, man. He gets pulled over by a cop, sure thing. Cop comes up to the window. He says, man, do you know how fast are you going? He sees this, the Pope and all this. Pope says, my son, are you Catholic? and the driver says, as a matter of fact, I am Holy Father. He said, would you mind terribly if you just let me get away this one time? I never get to have any fun, you know, the whole routine. He says, man, I'm going to have to call this in, you know, Holy Father. It's, you know, regulations. Goes to the dispatcher. He says, listen, I got a VIP. And he's going real, real fast, but it might be worth our while if, you know, we sort of look the other way on this one. He says, well, who is it? He says, very important person. He says, what is it, Frank Sinatra? He says, no. Is it the president? He says, no. He said, but he's got to be pretty important because the Pope is his driver. I got a million of them.
I love it.
How do you like that, Jacoby?
I like that one.
Feel free.
That is one of mine. Right. My dad has a joke. It's one of his favorites. He's told me this for years. It was passed down my grandpa, my dad, Pope jokes. The Pope goes out one day, the golf course, right? He's out there and he has a nun with him. She's his caddy for the day, right? He's going out there and he's on the third hole and he takes a shot, just slices it all over. Pope instantly takes his club, bends it over his knee. Dang it, just cussing at the heavens and whatnot. And the nun's looking, she's like, Father, I don't think you're allowed to talk like that. It's, oh no, me and him are good, we're fine. A few holes down the way, he gets another, shanks one to the right.
Right.
God damn it, why the fuck? And the nun, Father, you can't speak like that. He's like, it's all right, I miss, I'm allowed to cuss. All of a sudden, he's on the 18th hole, and here comes this storm coming in. She's like, Father, we need to get out of here. He's like, nah, we're good. The Lord's got my back. He's up there, and he gets ready to go putt. This bolt of lightning comes down, strikes, hits the nun right in the top of the head. She bursts into flames, and from the heavens you hear, God dang it, son of a bitch, I missed it.
That's very good. I like
take that one. I'll give you one.
A fair shame.
Yeah. Very good. Pope jokes on the Pope Real jokes. Vibe podcast.
There you go.
Yeah, you don't get that every week.
No.
I'm sure. Yeah.
All right. So you're at Northwestern, which we're all Midwestern kids here. Northwestern University is no joke. Must have been a good student in high school.
Pretty good. Yeah. You know, I wasn't the valedictorian or anything like that. Although I did write a speech for him. It was really interesting. He actually asked me to help him with his valedictory address.
Smart person.
I was just a good writer. You know, I was creative. I was good with language, as it were. But, yeah, I was pretty good. You know, I hated math and science.
As all creative people do, I think.
Yeah, couldn't stand it.
All creative people hate
math. I like science. I like physics.
It's more creative. You get to kind of, it's but no, like I'm the same way.
I liked art and gym. Not everything else
lunch,
was boring.
Yeah, lunch was great. Lunch was great.
Recess was my favorite.
Yeah,
subject.
That's a good subject for me too.
Yeah.
So what was your first feature film?
The first feature film I did was called The Package. Andy Davis, Chicago director. He did wound up doing stuff like The Fugitive.
Oh, later. Great movie.
So it was The Package. Tommy Lee Jones is in it. The great 90-some-year-old now, Gene Hackman from Danville, Illinois.
Oh, well, he is from Danville, right around the corner from me. Yeah, yeah.
Is that right?
Well, it's Danville, Illinois. I'm right there in Indianapolis, Indiana. I'm Southside, Indy.
So, by the way, is Dick Van Dyke and Jerry Van Dyke.
And you've done work with Dick Van Dyke.
Yes, I have. Yes, I have. So a couple of Danville boys. Bobby Short was from there. I didn't do any work with him, but the great legendary Carlisle Hotel pianist and singer. So Danville had some real talent. But I that was the first movie I did. It was... not a big part. I played a soldier in the field. Had a couple of weeks on that movie. They were waiting for rain, so I wound up making so much money in overages. Like, you know, they
were waiting on the weather.
Waiting on, not the rain, they were waiting on the snow.
Oh.
Eventually, they had to bring it in after like 2 or 3 weeks. They brought these snowmakers in. Of course, it snowed like hell. It was a blizzard that night or something. So they wasted all that time and money. But he was... Andrew Davis, whose father was a wonderful Chicago actor named Nate Davis, was really good about hiring Chicago actors and shooting in Chicago and making sure that we made some money because we didn't make any money in the theater.
Yeah.
So he would hire us and we'd just be sitting around for weeks getting overtime pay. So it was with that money that I bought my very first car, which was a Honda Civic, 1981 Civic for $1,100.
Wow. Yeah,
and I rode that thing around. I used to call it the Medellin.
The Medellin. Yeah.
I named it after, at that time, the Medellin cartel was like an infamous cartel.
Yeah. Narcos. I'm actually traveling to Medellin here in a few weeks.
Are you going to Medellin?
Yeah. Robert and I. Yeah.
Any guys from the Midwest, like the mob, the cartel, it's just like baked into you. You just want to learn about it.
Oh, yeah. The mobs that ran through even from Chicago to Indiana, from Indianapolis back and forth. We've had so many.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was back in the day. That's just crazy.
That's true. I called my car that because it was really a rust bucket. But I said it ran well, but it would eventually crumble, like the cartel.
So it was just like the cartel.
Good cartel. So.
And in a certain situation, it'll probably cut your head off.
What's it
like working with Gene Hackman? Like, I'll just say, like being Hoosiers is a top three movie for me.
Yeah,
I've probably seen Hoosiers. This is not an exaggeration.
Staple of my
300 times.
Yeah.
Really?
Staple.
It's a great movie.
Yeah.
Oops. Is this stuff I can drink in?
You sure is, yeah.
Okay.
It's water.
I didn't know. It's like, it's orange.
Oh, well, that may be orange.
Oh, that may be the monster in there.
But I'll drink it. What the heck? Why not?
This one's fresh. This one's a brand new. Here, I'll switch it.
How about that? You can have some monster.
Whatever that is, we'll put that here.
But that may wake you right up, Jacoby.
That goes what's in it. This is the real vibe, so I'm not really sure what's in there. We're going to call it antifreeze and leave it alone.
That stuff will kill you. I watch a lot of those Dateline things where they use ethylene glycol. I think that's the active ingredient in antifreeze, which will kill you. Anyway, I suppose it tastes pretty good. But that said, Gene Hackman was a very generous actor, man. I was
really?
Yeah, very generous in the sense of what actors say what they mean when they say, he's a generous actor or not a generous actor, is that gives you the room to do what you need to do, isn't trying to soak up all of the oxygen in the room, take all the sunshine.
Right.
But there was a moment where one of our colleagues in the course of the movie, in the story, is killed in action. We were on an assignment. And the director, Andy, you know, the clock is ticking. And he said, like, one of you soldiers, you have to cry. Harry, cry.
On cue.
On cue.
Right now.
Rolling. Action. You know, it's like,
cry now.
It's like, what's the matter with you, kicker? So Gene Hackman pulled Andy to the side. And Andy's my friend. I love him. Wonderful guy. He says, and he went over and said, God damn it. This is an actor. He's going to need a little bit of time. Give him a couple seconds. For God's sake. He's trying to, you're asking him to do all of this stuff. Let him have a couple of minutes right here. God damn it. Like this. And I wasn't supposed to hear all of this, but I heard it. And I was like, that was a super nice thing to do, man.
You shoot somebody out for me. That made you feel good.
And it really did. And, you know, the next take, I nailed it. I don't think they used it, of course. But nevertheless, he looked out for me in that moment. And I had an opportunity, you know, over those weeks in the field with him, I would do impersonations of him to the best of my ability from like Superman, which I loved him. Because he said, there's one thing he goes, You know, Otis, you know why the number 200 is so vitally descriptive for both of us? Because it's your weight and my IQ. Now think, people, think. And so I did this where he goes, he says, where's that from? Superman? So he was great. I love Gene Hackman, man. Great actor. Yeah.
When you're on the set with someone like a Gene Hackman or a Dick Van Dyke, yes. That are these, they're almost more than an actor. They're almost a pop culture icon because they're attached to projects that are such ingrained into people's psyche, whether it's Hoosiers or Mary Poppins. What is it like to walk in the room and do you have expectations for that interaction, or do you just kind of just try to treat them as normal as humanly possible?
Well, you realize, you know, it's a great question because I don't know if I had expectations as much as hopes, you know. I didn't think that he would be, I didn't know to think he might be useful in that generous way we just talked about. I didn't know to think that he would be kind of an aloof star, which he would have had every right to be. You know, I knew him about him well before Hoosiers. I was looking at him in as Popeye Doyle in The French Connection. I was looking at him in, you know, he did I guess his first big break movie was Bonnie and Clyde, you know.
Yep.
And so I knew that he's a legend already. There was nothing that I could, you know, expect or want from him. Even Tommy Lee Jones, I knew that he was, you know, a very famous actor by that point. But Gene was so personable. He was so one of us. You know, he had been in the Marines, I think, in the war and that. And he was just a regular grunt kind of guy. And it was the same with Dick Van Dyke. And I'm not convinced that the Danville didn't have something to do with that. You know, there were these kids from a not terribly famous, you know, southern town, which was, of course, in the shadow of Chicago and nearby other places. But they had this enormous talent. But I think that they never forgot that and that they were humble with it. Like Dick Van Dyke was wonderful. He would do crossword puzzles. And from time, you know, he let me help him with the crossword puzzles. Or I saw him one time in a park with these kids. They might have been 5 or 4, and they were playing, kicking a ball around. They had no idea that this was Dick Van Dyke. He was in his late 70s at the time. And he was a kid. He was with the kids in the park, man, when the camera wasn't rolling, and they loved him and he loved them. He had no.
And were they playing soccer?
They're just playing, kicking a ball around. And I thought,
wow.
He's a kid. And he never lost that. And I think you could see that in his.
Still to this day. Yeah. In the stuff you'll see online, he is still just
I
as in love with.
Grew up watching the Dick Van Dyke.
And he's had
I went to bed watching the MASH and Dick Van Dyke.
So many eras of his career from the Dick Van Dyke show to getting into Disney to getting into Matlock. I mean, he sent that boyish charm.
That was a household name, not just here. It was like worldwide household name. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's the last of a generation.
Yeah.
He's got to be close to 100 now. I mean, he might be 97, 98 or so. He's got to be real close to that.
And danced at the Tonys a few years ago. Do you remember? Did the
Graceful.
Step in time.
Wow.
And I thought, how is, and it just seemed like he was just having fun.
Yeah, he was up there. Well, did you see Dolly at Dolly Parton at the?
How about that?
78 years old and looking that. I'm 44 years old. You put that outfit on me, I wouldn't get one song out of there. Boy, it'd be a horrible.
How does he's 97?
I'd pay for that, Jacoby.
You probably 97.
He's 97.
97.
He's a check,
we're gonna have to keep them real cold if I'm gonna put them pants on because something will fall out.
Well, that's why we're watching. That's why we're watching.
How do they have longevity like that?
That's crazy.
You know, it's an interesting question. I think that that joy of life, of meaning, you know, is. Not to get back into the whole religious thing, but, you know, they found out recently that people more than happiness and more than wealth or comfort or ease, that people want their lives to have meaning.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's true. And I think no matter what the length of that life is, but if you find joy in the meaning, if you can take from this time that we're given, that we should be celebrating. You know, the Gospels say, count it all joy. It's not the Gospels, one of the epistles, actually. Count it all joy, it says, when you fall into trying times. Whatever it happens, that's joy. That's our ability to believe that something is meant for us to go through that experience, and that will give us a reason to have, you know, happiness, as it were, and that. But I think it's that. I think that's why they still are having a good time here, mm-hmm. and they have not, in spite of being in that hellhole that is, you know, Los Angeles or right. this entertainment industry, mm-hmm. which is devious in many, many ways, mm-hmm. and cruel in many ways. But that they weren't in that for, they were in it just because they had a good time doing right. it. They found the beauty of music. They found the beauty of performance and dance. You know, I don't think it's, I think the fact that he can sing and dance and that he can juggle and he can do all these kind of almost clown-like things.
Yeah.
You know, almost like the circus aspect of, yes. of it. You know, before, it's so interesting, before film killed the circus. Mm-hmm. And then television killed film and
video
and
killed whatever, the radio star. Yeah,
all of that. But you know, for millennia, people loved the circus. Mm-hmm.
Theater. Circus.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I can do this. I can leap from, you know, I'm the strongest man. I'm like just the kind of wonderment of it. Mm-hmm. The festival aspect. I think that's really why they like being alive.
Yeah. Yeah.
Before we start asking about some of your projects that you've done over the years, did you ever think that you would get to the point where young actors would be coming up looking at your work the same way that you did with actors when you were coming up?
I've always was very careful about expectations as a young actor. Like, I never thought that it was a sure thing that I would be able to maintain a career in this. From time to time, I've thought about doing many things. Thought about politics. I thought about becoming a full-time teacher or professor. I've been offered these things in my time.
I can totally see you as a professor and a politician. You have that.
Yeah, well.
I don't even know where you're at, but you got my vote already. You know what I mean? Like,
I'll keep you posted. Yeah. I'll keep you posted on that. But it certainly was a hope. Right, I think without expecting something, I hoped certainly and worked toward being worthy of study, of like I said, you know, a little while ago I was talking about the great jazz alto sax player is a guy named Julian Cannonball Adderley is his name, and I asked him what advice he would give, and he said, imitate, integrate, innovate.
Ooh, I
imitate,
like that.
Integrate, innovate. You know, it's really a great process that is. To be the only reason anybody would look at me and study my work is because I studied the work that should be studied.
Right.
And so maybe I think of myself as a conduit to that, you know, putting in elements. And this is something I learned to quite admire about the great Anthony Hopkins, is that in any given performance, he's impersonating somebody else. So if you watch very carefully, if you watch Silence of the Lambs, and you're listening to him do that voice, you know, that thing that he does, Clarice, and all, he's doing Katharine Hepburn.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's his homage to Katharine Hepburn. And he'll do Laurence Olivier from time. You know what to look for. You know what things that he's riffing on. You can see it, but all actors do that. As a matter of fact, my buddy Lawrence Fishburne says, good actors create, great actors or artists steal, and we do. So I steal all the time. And so whenever I'm in a kind of dilemma, it's like, how would I approach this scene or this bit? Playing Othello, for example, which is, I think, the hardest role in the whole Shakespearean canon for me. I just ripped off actor friends or actor acting idols because it got me through. And so yes, I mean, to the extent that people would want to study that work of mine, I would be flattered. I did not expect it, but I am. If they do, then I'm grateful for that.
Now, I'm assuming you have a love of music, because when you look through your your body of work, there's a few films that stick out as iconic music films. Done a movie about the Temptations, and you've done a movie about Ray Charles. And I can't think of, you start thinking of defining moments in music. Those are two of the more defining moments in music. So do you have a love of just music in general? Do you have a specific genre that you're drawn to?
I have a great love for music. I always wanted to, I taught music in the Chicago public school system for 8 years, not quite 8 years. I did other things before that. But I'm a teacher of it. And I don't know how many pianos I've bought for people over the years, but my easiest kind of correlation between acting and the kind of things that when I'm directing something or even acting something, I always make the equivalency to music. How do you want to score the part, for example? Where are the rises and falls? What are the repeats? What are the rhythms? What are these aspects that I can cop in that kind of musicality of particularly when you're doing work like Shakespeare or August Wilson? There's a musicality that the language demands. I think, by the way, Aaron, it was the Heartbeats.
The Heartbeats. Which
you could say is the same thing, which it kind of is.
Kind of similar.
We certainly ripped them off, right? It's the same, basically the same course of events.
Yeah.
Right? And the same character types in it. But, you know, being able to work on, you know, when I was studying piano, I studied Ray Charles. He's an enormously talented pianist across a variety of genres of music that are, to me, the most satisfactory. So I guess my favorite music really is, for lack of a better word, classical music. After that, probably sacred music, which has some corollary to that. And by that, I mean, you know, church music, gospel music. I have a great fascination because I grew up in a Catholic church. I wasn't able really to get that black gospel sound.
Oh, I grew up Baptist, so we were the fun group at the other side of town.
I didn't even know what, like, I didn't get to hear that stuff growing up, man. So when I heard it, the first I was like, man, what is this? This is great. I was like, Mama, what's that song?
Play that again.
It was so good. It was the first song I remember thinking that was Edwin Hawkins' Oh Happy Day.
Oh, yeah.
You know that song?
Oh, yes.
Oh, Happy Day.
Oh, man. Yeah. I heard that. I was like, over the moon.
I have arrived. My people. What is that?
So it spoke so to me. It moved me. I would wind up, like, crying. I would hear this music, the blending of sounds and voices. And so yes, I don't see how it can be removed from me at this point. I love it so, and I study it. I go to my church sometimes. While I'm Catholic, I worship with the Church of God in Christ people, the Pentecostals.
And oh, man, you really went to the other extreme. Yeah.
I did. I still go.
Hey, I'm. Yeah. Amen.
I still go. But man, I look at, you know, I'm looking at the keyboard players the whole time. It's like, man, how do they do that? Mm. How do they do that? You know, and but I love music so much, and I am actually in the process. I just wrote the book to a musical based on the Book of Ruth.
Yeah,
which I'm calling the Book of Ruth, and but I can't. I'm not good enough as a musician. So I got a guy named Gentry, John Gentry Tennyson. He's actually going to do the music on it. And I might get the great Syeda Garrett to do some of the lyrics for it. You know,
wow.
You were talking about Michael Jackson, and
yes,
Syeda Garrett, of course, wrote co-wrote "Man in the Mirror" and many, many other greats. She's a wonderful
one of the best.
Oh, she's also doing the music. I think they're going to be doing "The Pursuit of Happiness," and she's doing the lyrics for that. So hopefully she'll agree. And we had dinner about 2 months ago. She and her husband, and me and my wife, and we. So we were talking our way around that. But I think this could be something pretty special.
This sounds good.
Yeah.
It would be fun. It's a good story.
It's a great story.
So it'd be, we don't have to get religious, but it's one is one of my favorites.
It's a very popular story.
Well, fingers crossed. I hope this happens.
Thank you.
That'd be awesome. Can I ask you this?
Yeah.
So out of all of the parts and movies and things that you've ever done, worst movie, best movie, not who you worked with. I'm talking situations like that. This was my favorite movie to work on, and this was my not favorite movie.
My least favorite, it's an easy call, it was called Mo' Money.
Okay.
More Money, man.
I remember this.
Just
well, you were hurting. You were really hurting somebody's feelings with that one. I don't know who, but I'm sure there's someone who this is their favorite.
If movie. Their feelings are hurt, then they deserve. They've owned that. They earned that.
They earned that.
Yeah, man. All right. It's funny. See, now we're all Midwestern guys, but there's this line, and I felt this way during Mo Money because they shot into Chicago.
Yeah.
There's this line in the movie. What's the Vegas movie with De Niro and Pesci? Casino.
Casino. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
So I was just watching that in my room like 2 days
such
ago.
Such a good movie.
Such an epic. I love the costumes there. But by the way, so there's a line where LQ Jones comes and he says to Robert De Niro's character, he says, "Man, you guys act like you own this town, but you're just visitors." Talk about Vegas.
Yeah.
And these people came from Hollywood. They came to my town, Chicago, acting like they ran the place.
Oh, okay.
I was like, this is my town, people. This is my town.
Midwesterners are very protective of our cities.
We protect our land.
The flyover thing, we take it very seriously.
Yeah.
Because for me, and I'm sure for you, best blue collar, real Americans. Mm-hmm. Come out of the Midwest.
That's damn right.
Mm-hmm. And they're the most American Americans.
That's right.
Oh, yeah. We're the Midwest right there. We have all the trains come through there. That's all the production. Yep. That's all the factories,
industry that
it's
ever.
All the farmland.
Everything.
It's the Midwest.
And I get very, my wife will say, I get very temperamental.
Hey, if you earn our trust, you'll have it for life.
Forever. And we put corn on everything.
Yes. Yes, you do. I guess I just say. Yeah, but I don't like it when people presume things about the town or me. For example, you know, this is getting personal, I guess, a bit. But, you know, I speak a certain way. I have a kind of bearing. I've studied. I paid for it. You know what I mean? It cost me a lot of money to get it, to train the South Side out of me, so to speak. But sometimes people take that as like I'm soft or I'm elite, or that I came from some kind of fancy background.
You're from the South Side of Chicago.
But I'm from the South Side of Chicago. Mm-hmm. And so if you rankle me,
that South Side's
I'm going to remind you.
It's still there.
Right. It's there.
And what about the best film? What's the best film that you loved working on?
Well, I think so. They're emotional favorites. But it's been such a long career. So and I'm grateful for this, but it would be hard to pick between say Titus Andronicus, because that's where, you know, I'm doing Shakespeare, which I love and trained to do. And it's with, I think, the greatest director in the world, Julie Taymor, and the greatest actor in the world, the great Anthony Hopkins and Jessica Lange. And
I would agree with you on the Anthony Hopkins, by the way.
Yeah. And my buddy, I'm dear friends. My best friend is Angus McFadden, who played,
no kidding.
Robert the Bruce, in Braveheart. So that's where I met Angus.
Awesome.
So I had such a great time. But then the Five Heartbeats, man, that was my first real role in a big Hollywood movie, playing, you know, the Temptations effectively. So that's, it would be a hard call to make between those two. But then I got to play, I did a movie for Showtime about the great Adam Clayton Powell Jr.,
mm-hmm.
who, you know, New York congressman from the 2nd District, made all of these great laws, what they called the Great Society. So he and LBJ really crafted 60 major pieces of legislation to create more or less modern America as we know it. So for those reasons, I would say those three.